Monday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Lori Boyer, and the show will kick off with a check-in of regional agricultural news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
The University of California, Davis has been recognized once again for its leadership in the Departments of Agriculture and Forestry in the 2022 QS World University Rankings that came out last week. UC Davis's overall score in the Agriculture and Forestry Department was 92.4, making them first in the country and second in the world. Overall, 1,553 universities across the world were analyzed. New plans submitted to San Bernardino County show more details for the commercial development proposed near Highway 101 and Bettable Road, including an expanded variety of uses for the farm stand building that is currently under construction. The McDowell Charity Trust, the owner and developer of the site at 9644 Bettable Road, submitted a conditional use permit application for the 23-acre commercial node property in March. Plans include a 5,000-square-foot convenience store, 5,700-square-foot gas station, 2,500-square-foot restaurant, 6,800-square-foot farm stand with restrooms, a 125-room hotel, a 500-seat amphitheater, an outdoor movie screen, parking, visitor center, nature trails, raptor rehab center, retention ponds, and other supporting infrastructure. The county and developer are currently in the process of analyzing the CUP application, and the project will be subject to an environmental impact report, according to county staff. A CUP is typically requested when a developer seeks to use a property for purposes that are not allowed in the land zoning designation. Most of the property is zoned C1, a commercial designation. It applies to four highway node properties along U.S. 101 in San Bernardino County. The Board of Supervisors voted 4-1 at the March 22nd meeting to approve a reimbursement and indemnification agreement with McDowell Trust to process the CUP application. The agreement requires the developer to cover $80,000. In March, total U.S. grocery online sales pulled back 6% to $8.7 billion versus March of 2021's record high of $9.3 billion, according to the Brick Meats Click Mercatus Grocery Shopping Survey, which fielded March 28th and 29th. In March, total U.S. online grocery sales pulled back 6% to $8.7 billion versus March 2021's record high of $9.3 billion, according to the Brick Meats Click Mercatus Grocery Shopping Survey. March year-over-year performance across the 3E grocery segments varied as the online grocery market continues to evolve. The ship-to-home segment experienced the largest sales contraction, plummeting over 30% in March compared to a year ago, from $2.1 billion to $1.4 billion. The decline was driven by a 13% reduction in the number of orders placed by monthly active users, combined with a 23% drop in the average order value. Pickup sales declined almost 11% in March, from $4.3 billion in 2021 to $3.8 billion in 2022, affected by similar factors but to different degrees. Order frequency for pickup declined 8%, while AOV dipped less than 4% versus the prior year. In contrast, delivery reported strong sales growth for March, surging over 20% on a year-over-year basis from $2.9 billion to $3.5 billion. The number of orders placed by MAUs climbed by 13%, and AOV rose 7% versus 2021. Factors continue to drive delivery strong performance in March, according to David Bishop, partner at Brick Meats Click. First, he says the aggressive expansion of third-party providers into grocery is enabling additional ways for people to shop online. And second, newer services focused on faster cycle times are appealing to a broader range of trip missions and usage occasions. The likelihood for an online grocery shopper to use the same service again within the next month also increased during March, climbing to almost 64%, up 1.4 percentage points on a year-over-year basis. A key takeaway from March's report is that online grocery sales have retained much of the gains from a year ago, proving the resilience of grocery e-commerce, according to Sylvain Perrier, president and CEO of Mercatus. He says, even so, conventional grocers need to develop and strengthen their first-party web and mobile channels, leverage third-party solutions to fill in the gaps, and excel at executing the services they offer. In terms of the share of the wallet, Total e-grocery finished the quarter at 13.1%, down from 13.7% last year, excluding ship to home. Since most conventional grocers don't offer this service, it reveals that combined delivery and pickup share has grown around 40 basis points, accounting for 10.9% of total grocery spending during the first quarter. Worth of application fees and costs, as well as a deposit for a consulting firm to conduct the proposal's EIR. Without a CUP, the property's current zoning would restrict the farm stand to only selling seasonal produce grown on the property, according to county staff. Hazel Technologies Incorporated, a developer of new USDA-funded technologies to protect produce quality, announced a collaboration with Bakersfield, California-based Anthony Vineyards Incorporated, a leading family-owned table grape grower, packer, shipper, with 50 years of experience and thousands of acres of conventional and organic production under management. Anthony Vineyards saw significant results after doing a trial with Hazel's flagship technology on conventional table grape varieties Scarlet Royal and Red Globe. Dedicated to consistent quality and striving to be on the forefront of new technologies, in 2021, Anthony Vineyards found many commonalities with Hazel Tech. Anthony and Hazel both understand the challenge and value of expanding into new varieties. Today, Anthony Vineyards grows 20-plus conventional varieties, including Sweet Globe, Timpson, Sweet Scarlet, Candy Snaps, Sweet Sapphire, and Ivory. Hazel Tech also significantly expanded their variety trials over the past year, now working with 20 different varieties. According to Rope Eddie, ranch manager at Anthony Vineyards, he said after working with the Hazel team and seeing significantly greener stems on their storage grapes at the end of the season, he is now a true believer in Hazel Tech's products, and he says he can't wait to see what they will do for the rest of their conventional table grapes in 2022. 99% of commercially grown grapes in the United States are grown in California, according to Aiden Mout, co-founder and CEO of Hazel Technologies Incorporated. He said knowing that table grape growers throughout California and the rest of the world are starting to trust Hazel and the results that technology provides makes him confident their technology will protect a substantial segment of conventional trait grapes in the coming years. Hazel Technologies Incorporated is a USDA-funded startup company that develops new solutions to extend the quality shelf life of fresh produce and reduce food waste. It was founded in 2015 and services over 250 of the world's largest fresh produce packers, shippers, and retailers. Now in its third year in the market and widely available nationwide at grocery stores, the Cosmic Crisp Apple has announced its first ever culinary challenge. Seeking unique recipes and fresh takes on existing ones, the brand's contest is inviting entries across the United States and Canada in four categories: home chef, professional chef, retail chef, and kid chef. In addition to offering prizes and bragging rights, the Cosmic Crisp Culinary Challenge is featuring celebrity judge Carla Hall to choose each category's winner. Winners will also be treated to a virtual meet and greet with Carla Hall. Hall's culinary credits range from winning Top Chef to seven seasons of co-hosting the Emmy Award-winning daily cook show, The Chew, to her current role as a featured chef judging and hosting some of the most popular shows on Discovery's Food Network. Developed over 20 years through classic breeding at Washington State University's tree fruit program, the Cosmic Crisp Apple has quickly grown to be a superstar in its own right. The brand has been covered in nearly every major lifestyle publication and media outlet, graced the Twitter profile of an Olympic athlete, and has its own hot air balloon. The Cosmic Crisp Apple is prized for its delicious flavor, remarkable texture, juiciness, and striking color. The branded apple is also known for its incredible versatility, from fresh snacking and baking to cocktails and decor. For more information, log on to CosmicCrisp.com.
The California Walnut Conference is back. Mark your calendars for April 7th and 8th. At the Yuba Center Fairgrounds. This growing event has become the gem of Northern California Ag and brings walnut industry professionals together from across the Golden State. Be part of the experience and learn about new technologies, research, and meet with other ag insiders at the premier walnut conference in California. Register today at wcngg.com/events. The California Walnut Conference is powered by your top news resources in California, West Coast Nut, Progressive Crop Consultants, and My Ag Life.
With most insect pest control attention in Trina orchards now directed at navel orangeworm, it is possible that a previous almond pest can come creeping back into orchards. That could become the case with peach twig borer. The almond industry's shift away from dormant insecticide spray applications, eliminated or reduced May sprays for navel orangeworm control, and increased adoption of mating disruption can present an opening for PTB once held in check by those applications. While the number of peach twig borer infestations in almonds have tapered off, the damage they can cause is still noteworthy.
Peach twig borer kind of historically has always been a bigger issue in the northern part of the state, northern San Joaquin, and particularly the Sacramento Valley, really has never been a huge, huge problem down in the southern San Joaquin. But over the last, several many years now, it's really just kind of fallen off the radar statewide in terms of the importance of it. It is still something to keep an eye on, especially as you mentioned in young orchards. They can infest the kernel, the nut meat, like navel orangeworm, but we just don't see a lot of that infestation in the actual crop. What happens is that, especially in these young orchards, as they're developing, the larvae burrow into the developing shoots and basically kill the terminal growth, which then can cause issues with canopy structure, scaffolding, all of that as the trees begin to mature.
That was Sutera's senior technical field manager, Emily Sims. As control chemistries and timings change in the future for peach twig borer, almond growers could see larger populations and damage in some years.
We've gone away largely from dormant insecticide treatments for control of a variety of pests, but peach twig borer was one of those. Due to water quality issues, you just don't want to use the kind of pyrethroids and things at that time. The oils that we might use at that time for Zanose scale don't do a lot for peach twig borer. Spring is another possibility to time peach twig borer insecticides, but we really don't want to do any of that because of the bees. We can use some Bacillus thuringiensis with some level of safety for the bees. So it was a lot of kind of May spray timing. And I think a lot of the May sprays that were being used to target navel orangeworm, maybe not exactly perfectly timed for peach twig borer, but you were getting that kind of secondary control with your May or your spring NOW sprays. And the industry is kind of shifting away from those to a large extent with more use of mating disruption, trying to kind of get a bit away from the May sprays when and where we can to help protect the beneficials of spider mites, things like that. So I think because of these things, peach twig borer might have an opportunity to maybe start building back up a little bit and become a little more prevalent as we're doing different things for navel orangeworm. The chemistries for navel orangeworm are more selective now than they ever have. So we're not using much broad spectrum out there. And so those ovilarvicides have to be really perfectly timed to the actual, you know, first instar emerging for a given pest. And if we're targeting NOW at that timing, may not be getting much action against peach twig borer if it's out there.
In the event of a PTB infestation in a young almond orchard, monitoring management is going to be key. Growers or orchard managers should be on the lookout in the spring around mid-April for shoot strikes to determine if young trees are infested with PTB. Finding four or more shoot strikes per tree in a mature orchard is an indication that a control action should be considered. Harvest samples should also be checked for PTB damage.
Most folks, just as part of their trapping program, do put out pheromone traps for PTB, just something to keep an eye on. There are no actual thresholds for trapping peach twig borer in terms of you get X number per trap that triggers a need to treat. We often catch a lot of peach twig borer in a trap and it can look pretty alarming, but then we don't actually have the damage. What the pheromone traps are used for is to establish a biofix. Then we can calculate our degree day models, and that can help us time a potential spring spray specific to peach twig borer. What's going to help you really determine if you need to treat peach twig borer is right around this time of year, we're in April now, is going out and looking for shoot strikes. So you'll be looking for kind of that flagging or shoot strike especially within the younger orchards. And if you see significant amount of of shoot strikes, you may want to get that population under better control with an application of something in the spring at the right degree day timing.
As for biocontrol and PTB, Sims said that there aren't any designated biologicals that are released into the wild, as peach twig borer is not as big of a problem as it once was. However, there are naturally occurring predators for the insect. This is Taylor with My Ag Life signing off.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In national agricultural news, the fight over soaring energy costs and who's to blame is heating up on Capitol Hill 7 months ahead of the midterm election. Democrats blame the war in Ukraine and alleged price gouging by the oil companies. Republicans say the Biden administration's restrictions on oil and gas drilling and canceling the XL pipeline are to blame. Both sides have made their case on Capitol Hill as politically fraught energy inflation promises to be key in the November elections. Top House Ag Republican G.T. Thompson.
It is time to open up American resources. You know, it's a solution for the fertilizer issue with natural gas development. And so that's something that can be done with the stroke of a pen.
Thompson rejected the administration's focus on electric vehicles, while USA Rural Development Undersecretary Zuchiel Torres-Small said the nation's already moving away from fossil fuels.
A young person working in energy today could be working in solar or wind, while their grandparents were experts in fossil fuels, because this transition has been happening for at least a decade. Like all transitions, this one has bumps. There's disagreement and there's pain.
Thompson did not reject the use of alternative fuels like ethanol, but argued for an above the Thompson did not reject more use of alternative fuels like ethanol, but argued for an all-the-above energy strategy at a time of war that will severely impact food production.
We have a crisis right now, and it's a crisis that's driving up food prices to the point where we're going to be faced with increased, certainly around the world, hopefully not in our country, but we will have inflation here that's going to make it difficult for people to get access to the food that they need.
But elsewhere, Thompson says the grain and oilseed shortfall from the war in Ukraine will mean hunger, starvation, and death through famine this fall. The Environmental Protection Agency late last week revoked 36 small refinery exemptions to the renewable fuel standard that the Trump administration had granted for the 2018 compliance year. But EPA is also offering most of the refineries an alternative compliance approach that will not require the refiners to make up for the 1.4 billion gallons of biofuels or compliance credits. The decision to retract or deny the small refinery exemptions, which is a final order from EPA, comes with a caveat that EPA is going to allow 31 of the refineries to meet their 2018 RFS obligations without purchasing or redeeming additional RFS credits. EPA stated it is giving 31 refiners more flexibility because the agency has determined that there are extenuating circumstances specific to the set of petitions, including the fact that the SRE petitions were previously granted. Five refiners were dropped because two were declared ineligible and three others withdrew their initial petitions. The 36 SRE initially approved by the Trump administration involved the equivalent of 1.4 billion gallons of biofuels or 1.4 billion renewable identification numbers, which are EPA's compliance credits for refiners to meet their blending volume obligations under the renewable fuel standard. USDA's Equity Commission already has a subcommittee devoted to farm programs. It's about to form another subcommittee to focus on another USDA mission area. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
The Agriculture Department's Equity Commission is charged with coming up with recommendations for how USDA can end all discrimination and make its programs, all of them, available equally to everyone who qualifies, including previously underserved populations.
This can be an overwhelming task, given the breadth of USDA.
And so at the commission's first meeting in February, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said they'd start with a special commission subcommittee focused just on farm programs. However,
we intend and expect that we're going to see other subcommittees appointed over the course of time that will eventually get the broad scope of USDA activities.
And USDA has just announced it's looking for experts for another equity subcommittee, the Rural Community Economic Development Subcommittee, which will deal with concerns revolving around USDA's rural development programs and policies. The full Equity Commission will be delivering to Vilsack an interim set of recommended actions by the end of this summer, with a final comprehensive report summer of 2023. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Senators Debbie Stabenow, chair of the Senate Ag Committee, and ranking member John Bozeman are asking President Biden to quickly fill vacancies at USDA. They say filling the open positions can help increase trade opportunities for American agriculture. In a letter sent to the White House, the leaders ask Biden to quickly nominate a candidate to serve as the chief agricultural negotiator in the office of the U.S. Trade Representative. They also want a candidate in place to serve as undersecretary for trade and foreign agricultural affairs at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Global agricultural markets are highly competitive, according to the senators. Every day, new trade barriers against American agricultural products are being devised to limit access. They also point out that the agricultural industry needs strong advocates that understand the needs of American farmers, ranchers, and foresters who will represent their collective interests on the world stage.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Daniel Bays is a third-generation farmer who grows almonds, apricots, and row crops near Patterson and Wesley with his father and grandfather. But with the ongoing drought, they plan to reduce their planted row crop acreage this year.
So I farm with my dad and my grandfather. All three of us farm together in Patterson-Wesley area. So I'm a third-generation farmer in this area. And then if you go back far enough, fifth or sixth generation California farmer. We're growing apricots, almonds, walnuts, tomatoes. Probably won't grow any lima beans this year. And we do have some winter wheat. And we're also going to plant some safflower and grow some safflower on a field this year.
Depending on the field or orchard, he has a variety of water sources, including surface water from the Central Valley Project, San Joaquin River Exchange Contractors, and Del Puerto Water District, as well as groundwater. What's unique about Del Puerto is an agreement it has with the cities of Modesto and Turlock to buy recycled water from their wastewater treatment plants. In the long term, the North Valley Regional Recycled Water Project, as the effort is called, will include a pipe to carry the recycled water to the Delta-Mendota Canal and the west side. In the meantime, the water is conveyed via Patterson Irrigation District and the San Joaquin River.
We farm in four different irrigation districts, four or five. So we farm in Del Puerto Water District, Patterson Irrigation District, West Stanislaus Irrigation District, CCID, and Manta Carbona Irrigation District. So all of our ground is in one of those water districts, and they have varying water rights. If we can, we try to use surface water. Like in Del Puerto, where they're a CVP contractor, our allotment this year from the federal government is zero. So we're depending on our wells in that water district for a lot of our water. And then there's also the recycled water from Modesto and Turlock, which is the North Valley Regional Recycled Water Project. And that's the treated wastewater from the city of Modesto and city of Turlock that gets treated to tertiary standards, which is basically just one level below drinking water quality, and then put in a pipeline, goes under the San Joaquin River and comes up to the Delta Mendota Canal and goes into the Delta Mendota Canal. And from there, Del Puerto Water District distributes it out to the growers. So we also have that on the ground that's in Del Puerto Water District. There's about 6 inches of water that comes, it's that recycled water. So we shuffle that around to use where we don't have access to groundwater or really poor quality where we need to blend it with surface water because of the salt or mineral load in that water.
To say that trying to farm during the 3-year-old drought has been difficult is an understatement. Bayes said they fallowed row crop ground last year to try to save water for the permanent crops. They also pulled about 100 acres of marginal orchards last year, and he said they probably will pull more this year.
It's been very difficult, especially where it's been, back-to-back years of reduced allocations, and this year going on a second year of a 0% allotment. We fallowed some of our row crop ground last year where we didn't plant anything to reduce the water demand and take the surface water allotment for that and divert over to the trees. This year we fallowed even more of our open ground. We have some of our orchards that we pulled out probably a little over 100 acres last year of trees that were towards the end of their life, but probably had a few more years in them, but because of the water situation decided to remove those. And we have probably another 100 to 150 acres that at this point we're planning on probably pulling out. Some of them are apricots right after apricot harvest. Some of them will be almonds, so right after almond harvest, removing those just because we don't have the surface water. Even where we have groundwater at, the increased salt load, a lot of those older trees, you get to salt load levels in the trees where they just don't. You lose the vigor, you lose the health of the orchard. And so planning for what your crop's going to be, you know, we know it'll probably be just because of the nutrition of the tree, not even looking at weather factors and everything else.
Bayes said this is the worst drought he can remember. His grandfather pointed to 1977 as another challenging year, but Bayes said regulations were different back then. The current back-to-back zero allocations, combined with increased red tape, have magnified challenges. Historically, he said farmers in the area relied on surface water and, if needed, supplemented it with wells. With no surface supplies, they increasingly are looking at groundwater to survive.
For me, it's the worst drought. And I think my grandfather's been farming here in the Patterson and Wesley area since 1957. And I think he would probably say this is one of the worst droughts, you know, obviously from a lack of rainfall, but I think even more so just the regulations and the uncertainty with dealing with the Bureau of Reclamation in the state of California. You know, we're going on now, we have 2 years of a 0% allotment. And even last year, we started off the water year with I think the CBP had given us like a 15% allotment and then came back and reduced it and then came back after that and cut it back to a 0%. And they hadn't done that before where they come back after you're planting or making planting decisions and I say taken away water, reduced your allocation, you know, almost pulling the rug out from under you. But I know my grandfather talks about in 77 being one of the first really bad drought years he dealt with here. And the ease at that time of working with like the Bureau of Reclamation in the state, but in the Delta Mendota Canal and being able to shuffle well water, you know, pump it in at one field and take it out at another field, or get creative with some of the mechanics of just using facilities. All it took at that point was a trip up to Sacramento. You met with someone in an office, got an okay, and you were out there doing it the next day. And now that's changed to, if we need to replace a leaky pipeline that goes from a pump in the canal over to our field, I mean, there's a permit process and an environmental review. We have an orchard we took out and a pump station we replaced. And between dealing with PG&E and the Bureau of Reclamation on that, it was over a year-long process of getting a filter station updated just because of the paperwork and red tape. And I think that's probably what makes it even more difficult is just the regulation and the red tape that we deal with today. And going on a back-to-back 0% allocation where everyone's really depending on their wells hard in our area where they typically supplement a little bit or use them in a dry year. But, you know, if we have a surface water allocation, we don't use our wells, but just everyone, that's what we have to survive. And so that's what everyone is depending on.
The 6 inches of recycled water may not sound like much, but Bayes called it a lifesaver in several situations.
It's not enough to keep a permanent crop alive, but it is 6 inches is a lot better than zero. And it allows us, like I said, in fields where we have a well or have access to well water, where we can use that well and take those 6 inches and move them over to fields where maybe we don't have a well, or if you have a well or a pump that goes down and fails, that you're waiting on parts or repairs to be done, having that little bit of surface water that you can kind of keep as an insurance policy or just a backup to shuffle around has been a lifesaver.
Although the cost of the recycled water is more than what Bays and his family have paid for CVP water in the past, the recycled water is more reliable. That's because people do laundry and flush toilets on a regular basis. And because the recycled water is piped underground and doesn't have to go through the delta, Bays said Del Puerto district growers aren't at the mercy of endangered fish. Compared to going out on the water market and buying surplus water, if there is any to be had this year, he said the recycled water is much more economical.
The price tag on it is right around, I think it comes out to about $225 or $230 an acre foot. If we had a contract allotment with the Bureau of Reclamation, I think our contract water would be about like $90 an acre foot. So it's more expensive than what our allotted water is. But now to go out and buy water on the water market, if you can buy any, our extra supplemental water last year between $500 and $600 an acre foot. And we're starting off this year where it's sounding like if they're even able to get any extra supplemental water, it'll probably be up over $800 to $1,000 an acre foot. So at the $225 a foot range, it's, you know, more expensive than what we would typically have, but much more reasonably priced than what the market water market is at currently. And it's a reliable supply that it's not impacted by the delta pumps or, you know, fish spawning or anything like that in the delta. And where the district, you know, might be able to secure water from the Sacramento Valley or other places, but have to pump it through the delta, there have been instances where they've bought water, but we haven't been able to access it until later on in the growing season. The recycled water from Turlock and Modesto, people are taking showers, flushing their toilets, doing laundry every day. So it's a continuous flow. Like I said, it's piped underground, so we're not at the mercy of fish seasons and what the critters in the river might be doing.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.